Morning Edition and Morning News with Leslie Thatcher is brought to you in part by Park City Medical Center, Jans Mountain Outfitters, Deer Valley Resort, Promontory Foundation, and Carl Malone Chrysler Dodge Jeep Ram.
Right now, 8:12, and for the last 9 years, Rena Jordan has led the Snyderville Basin Recreation District, adding a number of recreation amenities and getting a $25 million bond approved. She announced her resignation earlier this year after accepting a new job. For our final interview with KPCW, she joins us now in the studio. Good morning.
Good morning.
So are you still on the job?
Today's my last day.
So, okay.
A matter of hours, I suppose.
Yeah. So you've kind of been back and forth, though, with the new job over the last...
I have. So in some background, I have served on the board of directors of the firm that I am actually going to work for now and have done so for the last 4 years. So it's not a completely new company to me, but this certainly wasn't the vision I had as a board member to end up being one of their team, but I'm really excited about it.
All right. Now, you likely could have ended your career at the rec district, so why did you think it was time to move on?
I think, so it was that time when I was about to be entering into a contract with the district. Back in October, November, we started talking about my contract, and really the trigger for me was the contract was for 1 year, and I thought, this is the moment where I probably can make a career decision. So 1 year didn't entice me enough to say I want to ignore other opportunities. This firm had been baiting me for the last 2 years, so nothing bad. It just was that moment where I said, okay, if I'm going to do this, I'm going to do it now. I'm getting older. I don't know if I'm going to be able to have this kind of opportunity in the future. And I feel like I'm leaving the district at a moment where I have an amazing, amazing team there. That's the teary part of all this week has been. We're in great financial condition. Have a lot of things in the pipeline teed up, ready to be done. So it just all came together.
Yeah, I'd call it great timing. Most people would have hoped for something.
I couldn't have planned it this way. So it just all came together. So,
well, let's talk about some of your accomplishments during your tenure. Now, you worked at the district prior to taking on the directorship. So you were serving as what?
I hired on as the business manager. When my husband and I moved to Park City 10 years ago, he worked for the U.S. ski team, and he traveled a ton. And suddenly I was in a new town with no connection. So I literally was sitting reading the want ads in the newspaper trying to find something to occupy my mind, or else I was going to move back to California because he was always gone. So I saw a job for a business manager. I thought I could do that, and it will be easy. It will be natural. It will be easy. Not a lot of responsibility, but not a ton of responsibility. And it was a year and 2 months later that suddenly the person they had hired between Bonnie Park and I had left. And so Bonnie Park and I tried to cohort for a while, but Bonnie didn't want to run the district anymore. So I got offered the job and I said yes. So 9 years flew by.
Yeah. Okay, so let's talk about some of the accomplishments. I mean, anything that you are very proud of?
I think the most important piece that I'm proud of is, and probably the hardest piece has been with the team. I mean, creating a high-performance team has been my passion more than anything else. I've never worked in government before, so I'm very proud of having created a very accountable, communicative, integrous team that works together and gets a lot done. So, you know, I think I probably went against the stream a lot in order to get things done, but I taught them how to do it in a way that works, that keeps us in compliance, yet pushes the comfort zone for sure. So I'm just extremely proud of my team. That would be the biggest piece of it. The projects were projects, and I would always coach the team that don't feel like we're done, because as soon as you finish one, there's another one. And we have had one thing after another in my tenure, and there's a lot on the dock right now. They're ready for it. This team is ready for it.
So what was some of the most difficult parts of the job? I mean, getting trailheads approved or getting the bond, you know?
You know, So this community loves recreation. So I think that, those things are just mechanics. And that's, again, something that I tried to lead the team with is those things should be difficult. The public needs to think about those things. I think for me personally, the most difficult piece, and I'm certainly got coaching on this along the way, is I was so determined to get things done that I probably didn't play the politics right always. I probably pushed the envelope of the politics sometimes. And I never took it personally, so I just kept pushing. And I think that that's probably my biggest lesson in my tenure here is that politics play a part in everything. So you have to get things done through the politics. I have created an amazing amount of friends and relationships in this town that I love. And some of them have been really difficult to get there. So I would say that was my biggest challenge.
Lots of times people don't leave a job because there's things or office and in many cases that there's still things to do. I mean, what do you feel like you're leaving unfinished?
Well, there's, you know, we have, I've gotten us in the position where we have 17 acres or the district has gotten us in the position. We have 17 acres of new land to develop indoor recreation space. We have 87 acres of contiguous land to that that will be deeded to the district to create the last probably large community park here. So all of that is teed up. Replay development for the Lower Village area of the Canyons, created a relationship there, and we've got the developer willing to donate a parcel of land for a potential aquatic center. And that's taken a couple years of relationship building there, but they are on board and excited about that. So those are all big potential projects of the future. The field house final phase is, I signed the contract yesterday, so construction will start in maybe sooner than we think with this weather, but so that is underway. Everybody wants to know about that crossing at 224 and the Blue Roof, and you know that's probably one of my projects that I pushed the envelope on and I didn't get done. And it will happen. It will happen when the time is right, and it will be a great connection for the community to have.
We're going to be talking with Kathy Kahlo, the chairman of the board of directors, on Monday. But briefly, in terms of your replacement, I mean, any recommendations that you have for the committee in terms of what kind of person to look for?
I think you know Megan Suldos is going to be the interim director, and Megan definitely embodied the kind of person I would look for. She had no interest in taking my job, which is a great reason for her to be the interim, which they expect to see, I think, by August. To me, you know, I think the traditional, this team that I'm leaving behind knows how to run their areas of the district. I think it's really important that the board consider somebody who is business-minded, who has some experience in getting things done through people, not necessarily themselves. Certainly to understand the financial side of the rec district business is really important. I mean, we have some big things to get done, and you have to know how to get that money. So I haven't really been asked what I think, but I think that will be the key components of what that person needs to be. Matt, Brian, Bob, Megan, Melissa, they know how to run their departments.
Okay. So you're staying in Park City.
We are.
Just commuting for now.
Right. We live out of town. We live out in Toohey. We love it here. My husband doesn't want to leave here, even though he's from Scotland. So I am required to spend 180 days a year in Amsterdam. So the time that I'm not in Amsterdam, I'll be here and maybe even on the golf course.
Great. Okay, Rena. Well, hey, thank you.
Thank you very much.
Also, you have been a board member of KPCW. Are you going to stay on? Or?
I think I actually might be able to make more board meetings now. So I'm staying involved in my board commitments here and in my committee commitments with National Ability Center as well.
Great.
I love both entities.
All right. Well, and we'll see you around. Thanks.
Thank you.
That's the outgoing director of the Snyderville Basin Special Recreation District, Rena Jordan. Summit County Clerk Kent Jones is on the phone with us now to give us more details. Good morning, Kent.
Good morning.
So the filing window officially open now. It is open until when?
From this morning at 8 o'clock until 5 o'clock on the 17th, on Thursday.
Okay. And what are the qualifications for candidacy?
You have to be a registered voter and live in the district that you're filing for. In other words, for the county council, you'd be a county resident and a registered voter over 18 years old and a resident for a minimum of a year.
All right. So how is it that school board candidates could already file?
Well, with the change in the law to allow petitions, there was an allowance made that beginning the first part of the year, I think it was 4th of January, candidates could file their intent to run for office and pick up a packet for petitions, signatures. And so they opened that up to the school board that they could file beginning any time from that time until the end of filing window now. Now, as far as the filing window between today and the 17th, even if you had filed an intent to gather petition signatures, you still had to file your declaration of candidacy in this window. So it kind of made a longer filing window for the school board, but everybody has to file up and by the 17th.
All right. Here in Park City, I'm familiar with the race. We have the three seats up currently held by Phil Kaplan, who has run for rerunning for his seat, Tanya Knauer and Nancy Garrison. What about North and South Summit?
Same thing in all three school districts. It's they all have five district representatives on their boards. And so this is the year that seats 1, 2, and 3 are up in all three school districts. And so there will be three seats in North Summit, three seats South Summit, and three seats in Park City up this year.
All right. Turning to county council, the council seats are at large, right? So anybody in the county can run for any of the seats?
That's correct. You do have to file for a particular seat. You have to designate whether it's seat A, B, C, or E that are up this year. And you file as a partisan party candidate, but they're voted on, and anyone in the county can run for file for any seat.
Now, we have E added on because of an unexpired term with Dave Uhr?
That's correct. Dave Uhr was elected to a four-year term 2 years ago in seat E, and where he vacated the position, and it's been appointed, and Tal Adair is the current sitting councilman. Because it was in the first 2 years of the term when Dave left, it's required that that seat come up at the next general election. So the seat E will be for a two-year term just to finish out Dave's term, and then it will be back up again in 2 years as a four-year seat again.
Okay, yeah, so just to kind of get it back on track here, yeah?
Correct, so that there's a stagger between the three and the two.
Okay. With regard to state legislature, one of the Senate seats in Summit County is open. I think it's for Alan Christensen.
That's correct. District 19 is currently held by Alan Christensen from Weber County, and where we have multi-county seats for both the Senate and the House, that includes a part of Summit County, but not the entire county.
And the other is covered by Senator Van Tassel, is that correct?
That's correct. District 26 is Van Tassel, and so there, one is up 1 year, and the other one is up on the opposite.
All right. So just two senators that incorporate the Summit County area. Different story for the House of Representatives seats. I think we have three, right?
We have three. That's correct. On the House, we have District 53 that's held by Mel Brown, District 54 that's held by Craig Powell, and District 28 that's held by Brian King. District 28 only takes in Summit Park and Pinebrook North, so it's just that corner of the county, and then he goes down the hill into Salt Lake. District 53, held by Mel Brown, is basically the North Summit area and over to not including Silver Creek, but it does go up into Park West and Lower Pine Brook and Jeremy. And so basically that part north is Mel Brown's area. And then Craig Powell, of course, is from Wasatch County, but his district comes into Summit County as down U.S. 40, includes Silver Creek, and back up into Old Town and south. So we're split up three ways there.
Okay. How much does it cost to register? Because this was something that the council had to vote on Wednesday because it has an impact on the filing fees?
Right. There's a formula for calculating the filing fee. It's 1/8 of 1% of the salary to be paid for the terms plus $50. So it calculates out to be $250 for the filing fee for council.
I think that's on the expensive side. How come?
You say you think it's expensive?
Yeah.
It seems
like why? I mean, why? You know, if you want people to register, why not just let them register?
Well, that's in state code. So that there is the formula. It's calculated, and so all of the elected seats is based on the salary.
Okay. Let's see. And will there be mail-in voting this year?
We are getting geared up for a by-mail election this year, both in June and in November. Our plan is to do a couple of mailings prior to make sure that we can verify addresses before we send ballots out. We will have, because of the timing and the registration deadlines, you can still register to vote up until a week before the election. And so if we mail out ballots 30 days in advance of the election, then we still do need to have locations available for people who either maybe didn't receive a ballot or registered after the ballots went out for ADA access and for a couple other things. So we'll have four locations is all we'll have on election day. Where people could either go and drop off their paper ballot, or they could actually go and be assisted in voting if they didn't get a ballot, which would be one in Colville, one in Camas, one at the Marsack building, and one at the Ecker Hill Middle School. So we'll only have four polling locations on election day. Everyone in the county should receive their ballot in the mail this year.
Yeah. Park City has such a transient population. Any concern about voter fraud? I mean, you know, for the person who may have registered and then leaves town after April and the ballot shows up in June, you know, and the new person just fills it out and sends it in?
Well, we have signatures on file for all of the registered voters, and that's part of the process to verify that the person that actually registered, their signature matches the return ballot when they sign the envelope. And so that'll be a process that we go through to make sure that, you know, if there are any questionable signatures, that those will be challenged. And so, you know, I mean, it still would be pretty difficult for somebody to forge a signature and have it be counted when we verify each signature on every single envelope that is returned.
Yeah, it doesn't sound more efficient than electronic voting, though. Why are we doing this?
A couple of reasons. Our voting equipment is getting to the point that, you know, it's aged, it's older technology, and we are in the process of looking for the next generation of voting equipment. Several of the larger counties have already gone to the by-mail elections, and so we're kind of piggybacking on their processes and the successes that they've had in by-mail voting. So I don't think this is a permanent solution, but I do think that it is probably the best solution until we find what we go to next.
Okay, Kent. Again, people can just show up at the county offices there in Colville. with a checkbook and file for office between now and 5 o'clock on Thursday.
That's correct. They have to file in person and pay the filing fee and fill out the forms, and then they go on to the conventions, whichever seat they file for and whichever party they file for, and then we'll come up with a primary election and ultimately who will be on the ballot in November for being elected to those terms.
All right, Kent, thanks for your time.
Thank you.
Summit County Clerk Kent Jones, KPCW News Time, now 8:33. 8:35 now. Good morning. Well, the Park City Council on its third and final day of its annual retreat with the goal to set some of its immediate short and long-term goals. In the studio to give us some of the highlights, Park City Mayor Jack Thomas. Hi, Jack.
Hey, Leslie.
So you've been trying to solidify this concept of a whole community. Is it that we've not been operating as a whole community?
No, I think there's many aspects of a whole, or we call it a complete community. But in a way to get a handle on it is to look to our past to some extent. I mean, if we go back 100 years, the people that worked here, lived here, recreated here, and they didn't really leave the community very often. I mean, we were more remote. And so, you know, there was a reliance on each other and those businesses, and it was very connected, emotionally connected, and very important. And I think that's kind of the principles of towns and cities, is they come together because of the amenities and the services and the essential needs.
Are the elements of a whole community?
Well, there's a lot of them, and I'll rattle through a few for you. But the notion is, you know, as time has gone by, I mean, we've got some amazing amenities here, obviously. We've got a great library, the Egyptian Theater, movies, restaurants, grocery stores, a lot of that. But what we're missing is that permanent resident. And so, you know, the rising real estate prices have kind of pushed people out of the town. And so some of the services we now have, you know, we used to have an electrician that maybe lived down the street from you. He's now coming from Orem, adding pollution to the Wasatch Front and driving all the way into Park City and creating more congestion and traffic. There's a tremendous amount of that in every category. So that reliance is not within the community, it's really outside the community. And so one of the concepts is that we help build, you know, more of that infrastructure and more of that, those businesses here. And if you don't mind, I'll rattle through a couple of these. We talked about complete representation when we talk about complete community. All people, non-discriminatory, all ages, incomes, occupations, religions, beliefs, and preferences. We also talk about complete life cycles. You know, historically, communities had their grandparents, the parents, and the children evolve and live in the community. We're seeing that disappear. We're seeing seniors downscale and move away, and children go to school and never come back, right? And obviously, we want to see a complete infrastructure, roads, water, safety, energy, wellness, transportation. Those are things that I think we're working on fairly well. And
well, let's talk. I mean, is it really realistic to say that the workforce can live here? I mean, you know, I mean, affordable housing here, really not even affordable anymore.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, I think this is a long-term goal, you know, but I've seen other communities do it. I know it can be done. I mean, there are places where people do move back into the core of the community. It's happening in Salt Lake City even to some extent. So I think, you know, it's in time, but it needs a nudge. It needs that help. And the consequence of not doing that is more traffic, more congestion, more pollution, you know, and so it's, and more consumption of energy.
Yeah. At the same time, though, we have, we had Cindy Matsumoto and Andy Bierman yesterday, both specifically saying buy up as much open space as possible. And we've had this conversation before. I mean, some people hesitate to do that, knowing that it just drives up real estate prices.
Yeah, there's a catch-22 to that. But I think it's also the brilliance of open space is that one of those things that defines the edge of the community and, you know, creates that sense of community, gives us a buffer so that we don't morph into everything else around us. So, yeah, there's a balance there. And at some point, you know, the pendulum has to swing another direction. And I think through this discussion of complete community, you know, we're trying to find that balance and equilibrium.
It sounded also like you and council members may be getting a bit tired of doing transportation studies, ready to see some action. When are we going to see some action?
Well, we're kind of tired about talking about it and looking at the designs, but that's obviously an important step before you implement things. And I think what the council is saying is both with regard to transportation and housing is it's time to really implement and get things happening. We want to see more affordable housing. We want to see some of those traffic pressure points along our entry corridors worked out. We're talking about HOV lanes and probably not in the long future, bus rapid transit lanes. And those are things that we'd like to see implemented sooner rather than later.
Well, do we have a timeline for that?
Today is all about timelines, okay? Today is about putting a critical path in some measure so that year by year we can see what we're accomplishing. And I think the council is interested in taking a whack at that.
All right. Well, what is on the schedule for today? And when should the public, you think, be there?
They can be there any time they'd like. You know, we enjoy having them there. It's an open session. And, you know, we'll continue to talk about the strategic planning and a timeline for it and really getting some real dates and accomplishments done here. I think more than ever, the council is focused on implementation. Other things I'd say, like the dark spaces on Main Street, you know, the affordable housing component, of course, treating, you know, that segment of the community who doesn't have a voice and hasn't been looked after in any way, the Latino community, helping with affordable housing and daycare. So, you know, it's what are some of those things we can do now?
How many folks did you see from the public yesterday? Any?
Well, unfortunately, the way the room was arranged, my back was to the crowd, but I could feel them breathing down my neck.
Those were probably the reporters.
There were maybe 20 people at a high point, and it varied throughout the day.
Okay, but no specific time that you know that there's an opportunity maybe for the public to chime in?
If I were the public, I'd come in any time, whatever, you know, it's people have schedules, and any time's an interesting time. And then at the end of the day, we'll kind of do a summary of what we think we've accomplished. We're going to try to measure what we do.
When are you going to try and do that, about 4:30?
Probably about 4:30.
Okay. All right, Jack, I need to leave it at that. Thanks for your time this morning.
Thanks for your time. Bye-bye.
Park City Mayor Jack Thomas. KPCW News Time now, 8:43. Good morning, I'm Leslie Thatcher. This is the KPCW Local News Hour. Park City School District has hired a coordinator to oversee its STEM program. Longtime engineering physics teacher Charlie Matthews for that job. He joins me now in the studio. Good morning, Charlie.
Morning, Leslie.
So STEM, an acronym for science, technology, engineering, and math. You know, we've seen a lot of discussion, this even nationwide, a presidential priority, basically because we're not seeing college students pursuing degrees in those fields. So as STEM coordinator for the school district, I mean, what is your job?
My job is going to be to assist and bring resource to teachers beginning with grades 6 through 8 next year to really begin to incorporate the elements of STEM. So first of all, a little history on the movement. It actually started through the National Academy of Sciences out east. And in 2009, they released a 401-page report. You can actually find it on the internet. And they came to the conclusion that a reason why American students weren't pursuing math, science areas is that the way it was being taught, beginning with young children on up, was typically that either there's no science, very little math at the younger grades, or if there was some, it was usually learning about science rather than immersing into it. So from there came the next generation science standards that many states have adopted. Utah just recently adopted new standards that are solely based on the next gen standards, but they made it look a little different to make it fly in the state of Utah.
Yeah, well, I think back at my science education. I love science in elementary grades. And then in biology, I had to, like, dissect frog legs, and I got turned off. It was like, I'm done. maybe we need to, like, relook. I mean, do we really need to dissect dead animals?
Well, it's a great question because it goes back to what used to be done or is still being done across the country, which is compartmentalization, where what the whole philosophy of Next Gen is to start with fundamental concepts and just keep working those with increasing complexity as kids get older. So your example of biology, a biological system is really a living system that still is based upon these fundamental laws of physics. And so with the Next Gen approach to biology is to, the kids have been learning about these fundamental laws. Okay, now let's see how that looks and works in a living system.
All right. So you say you're going to start with the 6th to 8th grade next year. I mean, are we pushing this all the way back, though, to kindergarten?
Another great question. The state of Utah chose to begin with the first rollout of standards grade 6 through 8. So that's the only reason that that's where I'm beginning. Next year is identified as a pilot year, and it actually makes a great opportunity to test out a few of the learning units with students, teachers, to vet out how this is all going to play out when full implementation occurs the following year. K through 5 was actually going to be put on a back burner. And I was at the state meeting at the end of January, and it was unanimous meeting with the state school association and the Department of Education to say, we want K through 5, that we need to get this down to the youngest kids. Otherwise, it's almost a meaningless effort because the whole idea is to start with the young kids. And again, it's this building block process. So what is going to happen is starting in the fall of 2017 is supposed to be a pilot year for K through 5 and also 9 through 12 with full rollout the following year, 2018.
So when you look at maybe for 6th to 8th grade, I mean, what differences would we see in some of the
well, first of all,
it's
another great question. First of all, STEM, the whole idea is to integrate. Science should not be a standalone. Math should not be a standalone. Technology, which has traditionally been done through CTE, Career Technology Education, now and going back to the National Academy of Science, they actually debated for a long, long time before the release of the report about the idea of engineering. Where should engineering be placed in the curriculum? And traditionally, it's been done through the CTE. And they came to the conclusion, which pushed the Next Gen standards, that science is inseparable from the engineering. So to get specifically to your question, it looks very, very different. The kids, first of all, use much more of an inquiry-type learning approach to the science rather than the old, okay, here's a lab, here's a set of instructions, go out and do this, probably a lecture that preceded it, another lecture that follows up. The idea is you have to give the kids some background information, but there needs to be this discovery for the kids to really engage and understand the process rather than following a recipe. Then the next step in this is application. Set up an engineering problem that's based around the concepts that they've just learned in science and let them take that through to a possible solution. And one of the wonderful things about that is it's no longer the right answer. There could be a universe of possible solutions to that engineering problem, but now they're applying the science in a real-world type situation.
So are you writing the curriculum then for the science and math teachers or...?
I'll be working together. We have fantastic teachers here in Park City, and we have wonderful teachers that are already doing great things. A lot of what I'm going to be doing is tapping into what's already being done, but work that across the board so that we're all exposed to what Teacher X has as a great activity, but also then looking, so that's the horizontal part of it, getting within a grade level, all the different teachers that we can work together with. I do want to help in developing curricula. I also want to stay in the classroom. I'd like to go in and model what I can with it. I have an engineering background that many science teachers don't, and so hopefully I can assist in some of that area. But then on the vertical end, the K through 12, what I can do is look from this big overhead view to make sure that we're developing an articulated program that really gets these kids starting at K all the way through 12 to where hopefully this true next generation of students is going to be able to operate and have a passion for science, technology, engineering, and math that perhaps hasn't been happening.
Yeah, and part of that is because we tend to separate our kids, you know. It's kind of like, oh, they're good with words and writing, and then they're good with math and science. I mean, so how is it that we kind of create this holistic?
And that's going to be, first of all, in broad strokes, the whole idea of next-gen science was to align with Common Core math, Common Core language arts and social studies, such that we could begin to look at integrating these programs. Pragmatically, that's going to be a challenge. In the self-contained classroom of K through 5, it's going to be mainly just working with the teachers in assisting to get activities that go across board, where they have a science element to it, there's some analysis that's mathematical, they have an engineering project, perhaps some reading, both prose and technical reading that goes along with it. As we get into the higher grades, middle school on up, where we do have departmentalization, it's going to be a challenge. I look forward to the challenge. I think we have an opportunity here to begin to really get our departments to work together. And by the way, the only reason they don't is the world of teaching, there's this big, huge thing called time, or lack thereof. And fortunately, I'm going to be in a position where I can be that fly that bounces around from teacher to teacher, department to department.
Okay, Charlie, I need to leave it at that. Thanks for your time this morning.
Okay, thanks.
That's Park City School District's new STEM program coordinator, Charlie Matthews. Coming up on Monday evening, Leadership Park City presents its annual community leadership program. This year, it'll be focused on women in leadership. And on the phone with details, I have the founder of the popular leadership program, Miles Rademan. Good morning, Miles.
Good morning, Leslie.
So in years past, you've brought in a guest speaker trying to address the leadership class. This year, you're doing something different. How come?
Well, actually, we've done a combination over the years. Occasionally, we've had panels of people. A couple of years ago, we had a panel. And often, we have had guest speakers. And as you mentioned, once a year as part of our program, the leadership program, we open it up to the public and have done this community leadership event. And this will be the 22nd year we're doing that. It just seemed appropriate this year to have a panel of local women talking about the changing role of women in leadership. And, this is the week of the International Women's I forget the exact name of it, but the International Women's Day or something was Monday, I believe. And so it seemed like it lined up well with that. And it's interesting to me that, you know, we go down to the legislature in January with the class, and just about everyone who speaks to us is male. And yet we know there are so many incredible women in leadership in Utah, and especially in Park City. So it just seemed like an appropriate time to do this. And we have an embarrassment of women leaders here. So we tried to pick some of what I would consider non-traditional women leaders. Maybe people don't know them as well. People don't maybe identify them as leaders, but they are. And hopefully we found a great moderator. And I really strained my relationship with you by asking you to do this when I knew you were very busy, but you
if I had looked at the calendar more closely and had seen that it was the Monday after daylight savings changes, the answer would have been no.
I know that. Well, I caught you at a weak moment.
You did. Anyway, it's going to be Jim Santee Auditorium, 7 to 9 p.m. If people can't make it, KPCW will be broadcasting it live. Let's talk real briefly about the panelists that we do have lined up. We have Mary Beth Maziarz, Donna McAleer, Liza Simpson, Nanchalot Noker, Joy Barrett, and Beth Lohman. And I think as we tried to put this group together, we really wanted to have people who could speak about leadership from very different perspectives.
Exactly. And you remember You and I developed a list, quite a long list, of potential people who could speak. And I think we both decided it'd be really nice to find some people maybe that were, I consider, non-traditional. I mean, it's easy to say that, you know, if you're a county commissioner, if you're the city manager and so forth. And we have, as I said, fabulous women leaders in this community. These are some women who have done incredible things in our community, but maybe have not taken the spotlight that much. And so it'll be interesting to hear what they have to say about their role in leadership and how they define leadership, because I think we have been very narrow in our definitions of leadership.
Yeah. What do you hope people will get out of the evening?
I'm hoping, number one, it'll be entertaining. That's always the number one thing when you do a program, you live broadcast it, and you ask people to come, that people have interesting things to say, the panelists, but also you'll have a section, you know, that's open to the public. So I'm hoping that people ask questions, and I hope there'll be a lot of new insights that are offered as we talk about leadership, because, again, I think the whole country is starting to grapple with the idea, what does leadership mean? And is there one sort of set of characteristics? Is there a gender difference in leadership? And, you know, this has been a subject for a long time. I actually worked with the Kellogg Foundation 30 years ago on this issue and did a fellowship with them on non-traditional leadership. And so we discussed that quite a bit. But I'm always interested because when we ask for applications for the Park City Leadership Program, usually 60 to 70% of our applicants every year are women. And so that's an interesting phenomenon right there. You know, why is it so heavily weighted for women when it's a 50-50 split in our country as to, you know, demographics? But about 60 to 70% every year who apply for the leadership program are women.
All right. Well, we'll have at least 30 people there, right, because it's required attendance by the current leadership class?
Well, about 30 people there, you and I, so we go there, it's 32, we're up to 32. But I think it'll be a great evening, and I think these are very interesting women who will probably say some things that I'm sure will shock, well, I don't know, shock me, but will challenge even what I think, because, you know, we don't often ask this question directly. As I said, we have lots of panels and I have lots of speakers during the year, but we've never focused directly in on this feminine look at leadership and what that might mean and what that might mean to the young people in our community.
All right. So you're what about halfway through the current leadership class syllabus?
Yeah, we start the class in October. And so at this, actually Monday night before we do this panel, the class is going to meet and decide on their class project for this year. And they have proposed 10 potential class projects, and they'll be discussing those and voting on the one that they want to take on. We've had some great projects during the year. As a matter of fact, maybe Mary Beth will talk about it. She helped lead the project last year, which was a community recognition day and all that. And you know, I might also say that we're being sponsored in this whole thing by the Miller Law Group, Christina Miller, who is a great woman leader in our community, too. You know, instead of asking her to be on the panel, we asked her to sponsor this with KPCW. So I'm thrilled that she's doing that.
Yeah, thanks, Christina. So, okay, again, it's happening Monday night, 7 o'clock at Jim Santee Auditorium. If you can't be there, it's free, open to the public.
Or you can turn on the radio, but we'd love you to come and see us in action. It'd be wonderful.
Okay, Miles, thanks.
Thank you, Leslie.
That's the founder of Leadership Park City, Miles Radiman. News Time, 8:59.
Morning Edition and Morning News with Leslie Thatcher is brought to you in part by Park City Medical Center, Jans Mountain Outfitters, Deer Valley Resort, Promontory Foundation, and Carl Malone Chrysler Dodge Jeep Ram.